Our reading this morning comes from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5, verses 21 through 43. It's a wonderful layered story from Mark, which is a spiky, pell-mell gospel, the first one written. It has two words of Aramaic in it, which will be translated. That's the language, the spoken, common spoken language of ancient Palestine. When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was by the sea. Then one of the leaders of the synagogue, named Jairus, came, and when he saw him, fell at his feet and begged him repeatedly, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." So he went with him. And a large crowd followed him and pressed in on him. Now, there was a woman who had been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. She had endured much under many physicians and had spent all that she had. And she was no better, but rather grew worse. She heard about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, for she said, "If I but touch his clothes, I will be made well." Immediately, her hemorrhage stopped, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. Immediately aware that power had gone forth from him, Jesus turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you. How can you say who touched me?" He looked all around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, some people came from the leader's house to say, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the leader of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." He allowed no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the house of the leader of the synagogue, he saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. When he had entered, he said to them, "Why do you make a commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping." And they laughed at him. Then he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. He took her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, get up." And immediately the girl got up and began to walk around. She was 12 years of age. At this, they were overcome with amazement. He strictly ordered them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. Good job. Thus ends the reading.
All right, church. Are you ready for something a little bit different today? Good. Because that's what I planned. Today I'm going to share a midrash with you. And a midrash is a retelling of a scriptural story. And they're very traditional in the Jewish faith. We don't hear them so much in Christianity, but they do happen in our tradition. So what I have for you today is a midrash based on biblical scholarship, and you'll notice some imagination too. So today I'm going to tell you the story of the hemorrhaging woman in her own words. And there is a name for this character in the Bible. It's not mentioned in the scripture, but other canonical literature names her as Bernice. And that is based on research done by one of my seminary professors, the Reverend Dr. Kathy Black. So, we're gonna get going, but first, I need to get into character. My name is Bernice. I live in the first century in the area around the Sea of Galilee. It's not a Jewish town, but I am a Jewish woman. My parents married me to a young man named Jairus. He was from a family well respected at the synagogue. And not long after our marriage, Jairus became a rabbi. And soon enough, a baby came. How happy I was to be a mother. It was a hard birth. The midwives were worried about me after the birth. I had plenty of time to rest. 30 days rest is the custom after the birth of a girl. But in all that time, my bleeding never stopped. The leaders of the synagogue demanded I be sent away until I was well. And the midwives did what they could to change their minds. But even my husband wouldn't argue against the laws he believed in. Jairus built me a small hut on the outskirts of town, so I wouldn't be subject to the wild animals at night. I gave up arguing. It didn't help. They wouldn't listen to a woman, much less one they couldn't cure. And still less likely, they wouldn't listen to a woman they had already decided was too impure to be part of their community any longer. Even if I don't agree with the synagogue leaders all the time, our traditions are important to me. I respect them. But the religious laws have made my life more difficult. When they forced me out of town, they made me leave my daughter, lest my uncleanliness be passed on to her. I didn't want to hurt her chances of marrying a respected man. Her economic future, I knew, depended on how others perceived her purity. And an unclean mother, it's a social liability. But I miss her. When I would go into town, I sometimes got a glimpse of my family, but they could rarely talk to me. When I went into town, I had to go about saying, "Unclean, unclean," so no one would accidentally bump into me and be polluted by my own uncleanliness. I don't like that religious law. I think of it as guilt by association rather than reason. Some people in town even mocked me. They say I must have sinned against God to be unclean. My family used to give me money from time to time. But now, days when I had to sit at the edge of town begging. Some days I got enough to eat. And some days I got enough to try a new doctor, but the doctors never said or did anything for me that I didn't already know to do for myself. I'd lived on the edges of town for almost 12 years. And then I started to hear these rumors about a man. Some said he was a man from God. Some said he was just drumming up support to liberate the Jewish people from the Roman Empire. Some said all he did was teach. Some say he healed. I don't know what his purpose was exactly. But I heard he said everyone should be part of God's community, even if they're poor or sinners or unclean like me. I had this feeling in my heart that he is someone the likes of whom we've never seen. His name is Jesus. Then some of the men who used to live outside the town near me told me Jesus was coming here. I decided I had to go see him for myself. I was sure to wear my plainest cloak so no one would see me. I didn't want to be noticed, and I didn't want to scream I was unclean anymore. And when I saw him, my heart leapt inside of me, and I knew whoever he was, wherever he had come from, he could help me. Without even thinking about it, I found myself running toward him, and then I ducked below the line of sight of the people around him, and I reached out and I touched the fringe of his clothes. I hadn't planned to do this, but I had. And suddenly I felt new and energized, and I didn't need to look to know my bleeding had stopped. Honestly, I just wanted to run out of town back to my hut and sit there for just 7 more days, because then I could go to the priest and be declared clean, and then I could go and touch my daughter. I was already thinking about that when I heard Jesus say, "Who touched me?" I knew he was talking to me, so I started to shake. I had reached out to touch a man I'm not related to. I feared that if the men standing around him knew this, they might pick up stones and start stoning me to death like a harlot. I really should have run. But now, I knew my life was going to be different. Now, I would have my daughter. And how could I run from someone who had given me such a great gift? I froze, and I was still trembling, but I said, "It was I who touched you. Oh, Master, forgive me, please. I was declared unclean, and I missed my daughter. I didn't mean to, and I didn't want to disturb you, but I reached out without thinking. I'm so." Jesus wouldn't let me finish apologizing. He said, "My daughter, you acted out of your faith, and your action has made you well. Go in peace." And then Jesus and his group started down the road back on their way, and I stood there not really knowing what to do. I listened, and it was Jesus himself who broke the silence in the group. He asked them, "So who's going to tell me about this Jairus, who's the new leader of the synagogue?" And that's when I wondered, are they really headed to my Jairus, my home, my daughter? And that's when the messenger arrived and told Jesus not to bother going to the house because the girl had died. My daughter! I let out a scream. And then, before I knew it, I was running full speed toward the house. I was finally clean. Jesus had said so. So I ran into the house, and I found my daughter's still warm body, and I lay down on it, weeping. My daughter couldn't be dead. And I heard Jesus come in, and he told everyone except Peter, John, and Jairus to stay outside. And when Jesus came into the room, when he saw me and my tears, he said, "Don't worry. She's only sleeping." And then Jesus took her hand and said, "Little girl, get up." And she opened those big eyes. Those big, beautiful eyes I'd not seen in so long. And I reached out and I held her. And she wept. And I wept. My daughter, the ones whose beginnings had stolen me away from her, had been made new. And so had I. It was all because of Jesus. So I turned and I looked at Jairus and I said, "Some things are going to change."